next case is case number 74519, Quinn versus District Court, reporting Mr. Sinatra. We have Ms. Lundgren and Mr. Posenberg for the petitioners, and Mr. Langford for the real parties in interest. Ms. Lundgren.
Good morning. My name is Pat Lundgren with Donald Corona, and Mr. Posenberg and I are choosing to split the time, and we would like jointly to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. I'm here on behalf of four California residents who were served with a California subpoena. On the face of that subpoena, it stated that the discovery that was sought of them was to be taken in California, LA County specifically. Under the Uniform Interstate Deposition and Discovery Act that's been adopted both by the state of Nevada and the state of California, it indicated that any disputes or any enforcement issues concerning those subpoenas was to be resolved in the state of California. Under our rules of procedure and their California counterpart, specifically in Nevada, NRCP 37A subsection 1, it states specifically that the appropriate court for resolution of any disputes for enforcement of those subpoenas was supposed to be resolved in California. But Ms. Sinatra now comes before this court, and she's asking this court for an exception to those expressed legal principles. Essentially, she argues that for special parties or for special cases, that we should ignore those expressed legal principles and allow a party to forum shop, to find a jurisdiction that may be favorable to them. And forum shop is exactly what she did.
Ms. Lundgren, would any difference have been made had it been a Nevada subpoena?
No, Your Honor, it wouldn't have. Because in Nevada, to make that subpoena have power beyond the territorial border of the state of Nevada, you would have had to have, in essence, domesticated that subpoena in California. You would have had to get a letter of commission from the state of Nevada. You would have had to have gone to California to file a separate suit and had a California subpoena then issued to give that Nevada subpoena power in the state of California.
In my understanding, at the point in time that this came up, there is no Nevada subpoena at issue, only the California subpoena.
That's correct, Your Honor. And so, back to the farm shop issue. When Ms. Sinatra was in California on her ex parte application to try to have the petition to quash heard on shortened time, she took the position there that the state of California had jurisdiction over this matter. And then when she didn't get the result that she liked, she ran to Nevada to try to obtain a different result. In addition to her jurisdictional flip-flop, she's also flipped on whether or not that this court's decision in Club Vista should apply to former attorneys. Both Ms. Sinatra and the district court below took the position that your decision in Club Vista did not apply to former attorneys. Apparently now conceding as they must, because that was the facts of Club Vista, it dealt with former attorneys. She now takes...
Ms. Lundgren, before you go to your Club Vista discussion, I assume that's where you're headed with your argument, I'd like to return to the jurisdictional question. My understanding in reading the transcript is that the district court judge essentially based her decision on the existence of a pro hac vici admission of these counsel, and that because she had entered an order authorizing their representation in the case pro hac vici, she could require them, the judge could require them to appear for deposition. It sort of begs the question, is there any authority for a district court judge to order a Nevada attorney to sit for deposition in the absence of a notice of deposition or subpoena?
In the absence of a notice of deposition or subpoena, if they are not a party to the case, no, there is no authority for the court to do so. And in this particular circumstance, Ms. Sinatra takes the position that somehow that the court had the inherent authority by which to compel these depositions to take place. But what the common denominator to all of the cases that she cites on the exercise of inherent authority is that there was not an express statute or an express rule of procedure that specifically dealt with the issue. And in fact, in the one of the decisions that she filed, that she offered to this court, the Washoe Medical Center case, this court expressly rejected the use of inherent authority when there was a legislative mandate otherwise. In other words, you can't use the court's inherent authority to try to trump an express statute or to trump an express rule of procedure. But that's what the argument is in this particular case.
I presume you would also argue then that the district court in Nevada does not have inherent authority to compel a Nevada attorney to sit for a deposition in the absence of a subpoena.
In the absence of a notice of deposition and in the absence of a subpoena. If it is for the merits on the case before it, then the inherent authority does not need to be reached. There's a simple process, there's a simple procedure by which then that the parties may employ. And in that simple procedure and in that simple process, it identifies that the Nevada court then would have jurisdiction. In this particular case, we have...
Is there any authority that allows a district court to treat Pro Hac Vici admitted lawyers differently than Nevada counsel?
No, as a matter of fact, that your authority is, in the, I think it's the Imperial Palace case, that indicates that a court may not impose additional restrictions on counsel that are admitted pro hoc that are separate and distinct or add on to those obligations then of counsel then who are Nevada counsel. One case that I think that is important for this court to look at, and I would ask the court to look at this decision before you issue your written decision, and it's the Friedman versus 8th Judicial District Court case. It's found at 127, 842, 264 Pacific 3rd, 1161. It's a 2011 decision, and it's in the decision that dealt with the Uniform Act. In that particular circumstance, the Uniform Act that was at issue was the Uniform Child Custody, Jurisdiction, and Enforcement Act. And there was a struggle, a tug of war between the state of Nevada and the state of California. And in your decision, you said that the district court in Nevada must stand down, must respect the jurisdictional mandate that was found in that uniform statute, and defer then to the jurisdiction that was set forth, that was required under the statute, and defer to California. We ask this court then to follow that same exact principle here, is to tell the court, the district court in this action, that she must stand down. And she must defer then to the decision that was issued by the state of California. That is the only court that has actually looked at the three-factor test that was required by this court in Club Vista. And Mr. Polsenberg wants to address the details concerning Club Vista.
Thank you, Mr. Polsenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Dan Polsenberg for Lynn Wynn. There are two sets of issues in this petition. One has to do with discovery in general, and one has to do with lawyers and clients. I think it's clear that they can't proceed under the Uniform Act. But Judge Gonzalez seemed to be doing something different. And I'm not even really sure what it is. In her order on page 458 of the appendix, Judge Gonzalez says, I disagree that Club Vista applies given the fact that in the circumstances under which Quinn Emanuel left this case. Cryptic. Is Judge Gonzalez saying that she had inherent authority? I don't think that she is. I think what she's saying is that because of the Pro Hoc Vici, she would have the ability to call these lawyers in some capacity. Clearly, at the time they withdrew, there was a motion to disqualify them. There was a motion for sanctions based on conduct that they had engaged in. Mr. Bice makes an allusion in the answering brief to how Judge Gonzalez did not like these lawyers, and that is true. But what authority does a judge have over a lawyer in the case? I agree with Ms. Limbaugh. I don't think it's any different if it's Pro Hac Vici or not. Could Judge Judge Gonzalez issue an order to show cause not to be held in contempt? Yeah. Could she listen to these lawyers explain something during a hearing if they had shown up to say things? Bahena makes that clear. But here, she's going further. She's looking at their role as the attorney on the lawyer, as the attorneys on the merits of the case. And there's the rub. Because you can't just call lawyers and ask them questions about the case. This court said that in Club Vista. To meet the Club Vista requirement, you have to show that there aren't other means available, that it's relevant and non-privileged, that it's crucial. And we've set out in the petition all the reasons why these factors aren't met, but Judge Gonzalez didn't even consider those factors. It's clear she's going for something where she has not even collateral jurisdiction to the merits. This is totally ancillary. She would have an ability to do something that didn't have to do with the merits, but here she is trying to get to the merits, and that's inappropriate. I'd like to save the balance of the time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Ms. Langford.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mitchell Langford, Brownstein Hyatt, Farbershack for the Real Parties of Interest. It's a privilege to be here today, the day that you made your announcement. It's a privilege to appear before any court in the state of Nevada. One way to get that privilege is to study for, take, and pass the bar. Another way is to ask the court's permission when you're an out-of-state licensed attorney to appear before that court and subject yourself to the jurisdiction of that court.
So does that mean that all Pro Hac Vici admitted lawyers, a district court judge, can just haul in here and have them submit to a deposition whenever the judge thinks it's appropriate? They're going to bring in a Texas lawyer, a California lawyer, an Alaska lawyer. Pro Hac Vici admitted, we just bring you right in here and have you sit down and take a deposition. Is that the ruling we should be adopting?
No, it is not, Your Honor.
I mean, you know better than that. You know that the rules applicable to Pro Hac Vici admitted lawyers are exactly the same as every other barred lawyer in the state. So, Ken, would you answer the question I tendered to Ms. Lundvall? Could a district court require a lawyer in Nevada to sit for a deposition without subpoena and without notice?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Really?
Yes, as a matter of just procedure, yes, Your Honor. When the deposition is set to occur after the discovery cutoff, when the deposition is of lawyers and who had appeared in the case, one should seek leave of court before issuing a subpoena or deposition notice, before you take the deposition. So, Your Honor, we took two paths. First, we issued the California subpoenas, which gave them the opportunity to object, sit for deposition if they so chose, object based on privilege, etc. They made a motion to quash. They resisted any effort to have that motion to quash resolved before the discovery cutoff. There was only one court in the entire world that had the authority to allow those depositions to occur after the discovery cutoff, and that was the district court. The only way to accomplish that was to approach the district court with a motion that said, Your Honor, we tried to take their deposition. They won't give it to us. They've resisted even the effort to have a motion to quash heard before the discovery cutoff. We think you have authority over these attorneys who practiced in this case before this court, whose conduct in this case and observations in this case are relevant to this case. And therefore, we would like your permission to take their deposition. She said yes. She ordered us to confer with counsel about a date. Of course, when we reached a date, we would have issued a deposition notice. Because these attorneys were subject to her jurisdiction, there's no subpoena required. We could have a court's order, we could issue a notice pursuant to the court's order, and she would have the power of contempt to enforce it if they violated that order.
So you would suggest that on this record, we should interpret the motion that was raised with regard to deposition of counsel as a request to extend the discovery cutoff period for the purpose of taking their depositions?
That's how it was, Your Honor. It was called a motion to compel the depositions of these attorneys. Notice it was not called a motion to compel compliance with a California subpoena. We weren't enforcing it.
It wasn't characterized as a motion to extend discovery either.
Well, the content of it.
You're arguing that that's the essence or the gravamen of your motion.
I'm sorry for interrupting, Your Honor. The text of the motion set forth all of the issues, including the fact that they had sought to avoid resolution of the California subpoena until after the discovery cutoff, and was part of the explanation for why we were appearing before the court. So the relief was compel these people to sit for deposition immediately in Nevada. The basis for the relief was everything that we've been discussing.
So wouldn't it be necessary for the court, if that was the essence of the request, to undertake an evaluation of whether these lawyers should be deposed under Club Vista?
Well, Your Honor, I think that...
I mean, she specifically declined to do so, notwithstanding Mr. Ferrario's vociferous efforts.
Yes, Your Honor. So I think that the court, though, first, as we said in our brief, that the court, knowledgeable of the facts, understood the limitations of Club Vista. Limitations is the wrong word. This court in Club Vista said that there were factors that should be considered in addition to the three final factors. Those included, for example, is it former counsel? Are they percipient witnesses? So perhaps, again, the court could have articulated it. But I don't think when the court said that Club Vista did not apply, that she was being literal, that there's no application to Club Vista. I understood it, at least, that she viewed that the Club Vista factors did not apply to prevent this deposition. Of course, Your Honor, if the court disagrees, then the court should remand it for the lower court to decide the factors. But I think...
Well, that's an interesting argument. On page 25 of the transcript, Mr. Ferrario says, if you allow these depositions, it's a direct violation of Club Vista, 100%. Court says, I disagree. Anything else you want to tell me? Sort of sounds to me like the Club Vista's decision is over.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, Club Vista's decision is?
The Club Vista analysis is over with the district court.
Yes. So,
Your Honor. What you're allowing is maybe we'll talk about it later, but it doesn't look like that's the case here.
That's not what I intended to suggest, Your Honor. What I intended to suggest is that I can only give you my perception appearing before the court at the time, that there was a very summary.
Well, let's stick with the cold record.
Okay, well, then, Your Honor.
The district court judge said that she disagrees with Mr. Ferrario's assertion that there's any requirement for a Club Vista analysis.
No, Your Honor, I do not think that that is the only or fair interpretation of it. This court has considered Club Vista over and over again, this district court, in case after case, in situation after situation in this case. So I do not believe that the judge in this particular situation was just dismissing the existence of Club Vista or the fact that it could be considered in the case at all. I believe that what the record reflects is a judge who, on a very short argument calendar, 10 minutes per side, I'm looking for the right word. I've said terse a bunch of times, and I'll just use that. Made a decision that the Club Vista factors did not apply to prevent this deposition, and they shouldn't. She knows the facts of this case. She knows the issue. She had just denied the motion to dismiss the abuse of process claim, so she knew what the factual issues relevant to discovery were. She knew what these attorneys' involvement was in the case. She knew all of that, and so she knew whether it was critical. She knew whether it was available from somebody else, and she knew whether there were purported issues of non-privilege that they could be addressed.
The problem is we don't know all that, and without her entering an order saying, this is why I don't believe Club Vista applies, and lay it out so we get something to review, we're just kind of guessing here on it. So if we get that far, where we agree with you in the Pro Hac Virtue, at a minimum, when we have to send it back, if we believe Club Vista applies for the proper analysis by the trial court?
I'm not going to argue, Your Honor, that she did not make a record of the Club Vista factors, and there's not an order that contains the analysis of the Club Vista factors. So if the court thinks that that notwithstanding the unique circumstances of this case, where we're talking about former counts, the issues that I've already said, that it can't summarily determine that it's moot or not moot, but it would be it would just be an exercise of futility to send it back because the same result will come, then I understand and would expect the court would send it back for that purpose. So that just brings us back to the jurisdictional issue. And I'd like to say that Club Vista is very interesting on the point of who should be deciding and whether a court can have out-of-state pro hoc vice former counsel appear. Because what escaped me as we were briefing this, we've all worked very hard and very quick on this particular brief. So what escaped me as I was reading over Club Vista for the 19th time, but I caught the 20th time when I read it this morning, were some interesting facts. Because Club Vista dealt with a former attorney from Arizona who had appeared in the case pro hoc vice. And the parties to the litigation in Nevada thought that that attorney had relevant information regarding the issues in the case that he had appeared in. They issued a subpoena in Arizona. That attorney filed a motion to quash in Arizona. Sounds familiar. That court deferred. It quashed the subpoena, saying that there will be no deposition in Arizona, but expressly deferred to the Nevada court, the discovery master, to decide whether the deposition was appropriate to take in this particular case. What I think the California court should have done and what we asked the California court to do. In any event, the attorney in that case did what I think all of us should recognize, is that the court does have jurisdiction over the attorneys who have appeared in its case to make them appear.
I understand your argument. I understand you disagree with California, but one of the arguments that your opponents are making, there's an issue preclusion because the California court has decided that it's different than what the Arizona court did in Club Vista, so we should defer to the California court.
That's not accurate, though, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead.
It's not accurate. The decision about whether these attorneys should be deposed in this case on the facts of this case was first made by the Nevada District Court on November 6th. The merits of the motion to quash were not heard by the California court until November 22nd. By the way, the briefing that you were provided from California, notably in their reply brief, they didn't even tell the California court that the Nevada court had made a substantive decision. The only decision that was made by the California court prior to the Nevada District Court making its decision allowing the depositions was a decision not to have the matter heard on shortened time in California because there wasn't enough time and she was concerned about the due process consequences of having it heard on the specific date that we had requested it to be heard by. And a judge who wasn't familiar with the facts would need more time to prepare the motion, etc. So if we're going to talk about issues of comedy, let alone issue preclusion, the California court, the California court is moot for the issues that are before this court. The Nevada District Court decided first. We didn't enforce the California subpoenas. The district court here didn't order these California attorneys on a California subpoena to appear for deposition in California. That would be enforcing the California subpoenas. The only two issues before this court are, did the court have the power, when she was requested to order the attorneys to appear for deposition here, did the court have the power to issue that order so that the real parties in interest could issue a deposition notice requiring them to appear? And if she had the power to order, did she appropriately consider all of the factors that she was required to consider before ordering the deposition? We've addressed the Club Vista factors, and I understand your questions are appropriate, and I understand what happens if you think it applies. But on the jurisdictional issue, of course, a court, as a matter of fact, I want to point out the one case that they cite saying that Nevada Pearl Hawk Beach attorneys should not be treated different than Nevada attorneys. That is what they're asking for. If a court can issue an order to an attorney that's appeared before it in Nevada, a Nevada attorney that says, you've been requested to appear for deposition, I'm going to allow that deposition. If they can do that, then not allowing it for the Pearl Hawk Beach attorney, who, by the way, they keep saying these expired Pearl Hawk Beach applications. I don't know whether they were expired or not. It doesn't look like they were based on the history. There's no evidence in the record that they were expired. If the district court could compel the Nevada attorney, then the district court could compel the California Pearl Hawk Beach attorney. It would be nonsensical to say that,
Mr. Lane,
yes.
At the time of the request, they were no longer the counsel of record, correct?
That's correct.
They're now a state third-party witness.
They're now a state third-party witness who appeared by grace in front of that court in this very case.
Okay, but isn't the district court just simply conflating personal jurisdiction issue with the subpoena power of the court? I mean, isn't that what this comes down to? Those are two separate and distinct powers in different situations, and why should the attorneys be treated differently as any other out-of-state third-party witness?
I think the question is, why should they be treated any differently than any in-state Nevada attorney? Your Honor, there are case after case, the other side wants to distinguish them. But courts have authorities to compel attorneys to do things after the case is over, after they withdraw all the time, attorneys' fees, motions, the various cases that we cited in our papers. Now, of course, those are different issues, but it stands for the proposition that the court maintains its authority to compel attorneys to act who have appeared before it after they have withdrawn and even after the case is over. If the court has that power over a Nevada attorney, then it must have that power over an attorney that has appeared pro hoc vice. I see my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Lane.
Thank you.
Well, there's three points that I wish to make, and I'm going to try to make them quickly. The first point deals with what could Mr. Landsberg have done. He could have sought an extension of the discovery cutoff from Judge Gonzalez while it was that the California court was making its determinations. He did not do that. Instead, before this court, he asked you to excuse somehow their obligation to comply with jurisdictional statutes as well as to comply with Club Vista statutes because time was running. Why was time running? Because they waited till the last minute. Second point, and that deals with why that there should not be a remand to the district court for determination then of the Club Vista issue. Before this court, you have a decision that has analyzed in full each and every one of the Club Vista points. That decision was issued by the California Superior Court. That decision is final. There's no opportunity for a writ. There's no opportunity for appeal. The parties have stipulated that that decision is final. And so therefore, we've got issues now with dealing with comity and full faith and credit, especially by a court that had jurisdiction by which to issue that. The California court is the only court that did the analysis of Club Vista. The district court here in Nevada did no analysis of Club Vista at all. And one of the things that I think is important to point out here is that in analyzing the Club Vista factors, the California court pointed out that Ms. Sinatra's position was so lacking of substantial justification that they were sanctioned for the position that they had taken in the state of California. And to suggest that somehow that any foreign district court never has the right tools or they're not armed with sufficient facts so as to make an informed decision suggests that there is no circumstance ever where the Uniform Interstate Deposition and Discovery Act, the jurisdictional components, could ever apply. Because the statute expressly states that the foreign court, the court in which where the discovery is to be conducted, has jurisdiction. That foreign court is never the court that is going to have the full development of the facts, but they should have sufficient facts to analyze the issues that were before it. And that's what the California court expressly stated. And as a matter of fact, there's numerous references where, in fact, that she took offense at the argument that was made by counsel for Ms. Sinatra that she wasn't fully informed enough about the case to make an informed decision.
You said that the California case is now final, that the parties stipulated to being final. So is that correct? There was some sort of stipulation so there can be no appeal or writ on the California case?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that finality came before the decision from the district court. And allow me then to make my last point, which is the timeline. This court has made clear that all pronouncements are not orders. You have made clear that it takes a written order by which then to establish a decision by a district court. What's the date of the district court's decision in this case? November 30. What's the date of the California Superior Court decision? November 22nd. And the parties, you are correct, have stipulated that that is a final order from which that there is no writ or appeal that can be taken. And so therefore, it has all the elements that would require this court to give it issue preclusion and to recognize not only the doctrines of comity, but also full faith and credit for that decision, so that we don't end up with another tug of war between the state of Nevada and the state of California. So we ask this court not to make any exceptions, not to find that special parties or special cases should deviate from express jurisdictional dictates and express requirements coming from this court in the context of Club Vista. And we would ask the court then to reverse the district court and to recognize and give issue preclusion effect then to the California decision. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Langlo, Mr. Polsenberg. Mr. Langberg, this matter will stand submitted. And again, I want to thank all the attorneys from the Acata matter at 10 o'clock and this Quinn matter at 10:30 for your participation in this. I know that we did a hurry-up job on this, but we felt that it was important that these cases be heard this morning. So thank you to all of you in this case. These cases will stand submitted.